Well, happy Monday to you, as happy as a Monday can be. Welcome to this edition of East Tennessee's most non-controversial, non-political, somewhat informative radio show. I want it to be extremely informative. I thought Friday was pretty good, you know, when we talk about scenarios that people go through when they're buying and selling and trading cars. I do want to talk a little bit about selling your car and things you need to be careful about. We really didn't get into that. You know, where do you market your car? I've had a lot of luck in certain areas, and I'll tell you when you should use them and when you shouldn't. And then, you know, when do you take your car and shop it? You know, you can do that. If you are, you know, you got to have thick skin a little bit, not worry about getting your feelings hurt. Because you got to keep in mind, if you go to a dealer to shop your car, he's buying that car minus his expected reconditioning expenses, which is, you know, get it ready to put on the front line to sell it. And then he's got profit motive. He's a capitalist, and he wants to make a profit. And he also wants to be safe. You know, some of the cars that folks bring in to car dealers to sell will never hit the lot. Many times they end up wholesaling those cars immediately. They'll call the auction up in Abingdon or in Johnson City. There's a new auction. Knoxville, someplace like that. Maybe even Statesville, North Carolina, and they'll ship those cars. They'll build up about two or three truckloads, and they'll send them all to the auction at one time and have a big sale. And that's what happens to your cars. That's exactly what CarMax does. Or Carvana, you know, if you sell your car to them and it's a junker, then they're not going to keep it. They're going to wholesale it. They're going to sell it to somebody that sells junkers. And, you know, there's a lot of money in junk right now. Sometimes they'll actually be junk. They'll actually crush the cars, send them to a salvager, and that's the best source to get some money out of your car. You know, sometimes a car that's parted out is worth more than if it's drivable. So who knows? But we'll get into that in just a minute. You know, it's good to see some of the news right now is positive as far as the chip problem, you know, the computer chip problem that I've been endlessly complaining about and talking about. Ford has decided that they're going to start making their own chips. They said, the heck with this. We don't want this to happen again. This shortage, folks, is not going to be over for 2 or 3 years. It's going to get better. The problem is there's basically, I'm going to simplify this. There are two basic kinds of chips. There's legacy chips, and then there's potato chip. No, I'm not. Then there's the modern, smaller, more sophisticated chips. Legacy chips are those that they've been around a while, and they're used in just about everything. But the technology is older technology, probably developed more than 10 years ago. And 10 years is like a lifetime in the computer industry. So these chips have been, you know, they're used in everything from electric razors to automobile infotainment systems. And they are almost like like steel or plastic or wood. You know, it's a commodity now. But the big chip makers don't want to. They know that they need a lot more of them, and the demand for them is high, but they don't want to build and invest in all the equipment to be able to make them because they're afraid that once this bubble is over with and this high demand and shortage is over with, then people won't want them anymore, and they'll have billions of dollars invested in these factories and stuff to build this stuff, and nobody will want them. I can understand that. But in the meantime, what do we do? Well, one of the things that's happening is companies like Ford and General Motors, and they're decontenting vehicles. You ever heard that word? Decontenting. That's like when you go clean your closet out and you get rid of all those clothes that you never wear. You know, there's no sense having them, so you decontent. Well, that's not a great example, but it's kind of that. So basically what they're doing is they're taking out options that people really don't use. And if it's something that is either they don't use or it's not real popular or it's superfluous, you like that word, then they get shed of it and don't make it available. Now, General Motors has made very public some of the things they're cutting out. And I think some of the other manufacturers are being a little bit more quiet about it. But Ford and General Motors are both looking at getting into the semiconductor business. They do not want to be held hostage by a supplier situation. You know, keep in mind, General Motors and Ford and Chrysler and Toyota, they don't really manufacture much anything other than engines and sometimes transmissions. Just about everything else is made by a supplier. If you saw, I've seen these maps that have little errors, like if you have a picture of a car, and it's a see-through car, and they have lines drawn to all the different components in the car, and beside the line, at the end of the line, you have the name of the company that makes that, and it has nothing to do with GM or Ford or Toyota or anybody. What Ford and GM and so forth and so on do is they assemble vehicles. All these suppliers send their stuff in, and they assemble them. Now, you know, computer chips are a very complicated product, and turning around a redesign, a remanufacture, whatever of that is way more complicated than a shock absorber or a spring or a fender or leather. You know, there's all of the different components that go into a vehicle. Computer chips are the scarcest. I mean, they're all over the car, but they are the when somebody can't ship them to you, you're done. You park them out in huge parking lots, just like they are still doing right now. We're starting to get some Broncos in. We're starting to get some Bronco Sports. Nissan product is starting to flow a little bit better. Saw Honda is planning on going to full production on some of their vehicles. Toyota dealers have been strangled by this chip crisis, but they are, you know, they were kind of late coming into the game. They did pretty well. I don't know whether they had extra inventories that prepared for this or not, but then they ran out of cars. And so it's an ailment that has affected everybody, but I think we're going to see some of these manufacturers say, heck with this, we'll just make our own. And another thing I think you're going to see is more domestic production of a lot of these critical parts. I guess it's just labor is cheaper in China and Taiwan and Indonesia and different places where a lot of these fabs are. That's what they call a chip factory. It's called a fab. It's a good thing, I think, if there's more jobs because of chips. Because, you know, I was talking to a customer the other day, and they said, you know, what's going to happen to all these jobs, these people that make engines and transmissions and differentials, all of these different components that are required for an internal combustion engine? And I don't know what the answer to that is. I would assume that, there's going to be additional production of different types of products that go into electric cars. There's going to be some displacement of folks in terms of job. People are going to have to change careers. You know, if I was a young person going into college, goodness, engineering, any type of engineering, any type of computer science, computer technology, design, I think is going to be good careers, of course, medical profession and stuff. But I think there's still going to be, in retail, there's always going to be need for people who can sell. Nothing happens unless something's sold. Of course, they don't have anything to sell if it's not manufactured. So there's several ways to look at that. Well, let's take our first break and we'll be back here in just a second. Okay, I said we were going to talk about selling your car right now. I get a lot of phone calls, as you can imagine, because I'm on this radio show and, you know, the people who listen hear me talk about all these old cars. And I get phone calls, a lot of phone calls about cars, the values. Sometimes they're wanting to sell them. Sometimes they just want to know what they're worth. And they want to know, you know, what's the best avenue to take to sell the car. I had a gentleman show up at the dealership yesterday, and he said he had an older car. I think it was a 94 model car. Wanted to see what it was worth, if I'd be interested in buying it. And, you know, yeah, everything's worth something. That's one way to sell a car is, like I say, take it out and shop it. You know, go to different places and see what somebody's willing to pay you for it. I use several different sources. Of course, I'm selling vintage cars for the most part. I mean, not separate from Gateway Ford and Gateway Nissan and all that. I'm selling a lot of, just like this 49 Buick. I have a 49 Buick sedan, four-door sedan that I was selling. And I thought that by putting it on Bring a Trailer, which only cost me $99 to list the car, there's a lot of work involved taking the pictures and getting all the information together that is required to be able to list a car on Bring a Trailer. So it's not like it's, you know, my time's worth something. It's at least 7 1/4 an hour. But anyway, I did get the thing listed. I thought it would sell. It didn't sell. Didn't even hit my reserve. So, you know, I had a couple people contact me after the sale and said, I'm still interested in the car and so forth. So in the meantime, since I was crushed that it didn't sell, I decided to relist it on Facebook Marketplace. Now, I had had it on Facebook Marketplace over a year ago and had it sold, I thought, until I took it for a spin and put it up on a lift, and my one of my consultants, which is one of my metal guys down at where we do restoration stuff, he said, Lenny, this car's dangerous. This rear end could fall out of this car. And I said, well, that's wonderful. I can't sell it then. So I had to spend about $2,500 fixing that car. Now, there's some shady characters that would just sell it anyway, but that's not me. so anyway, I spent the money, decided, got everything fixed. I made some other improvements to the car, and I said, I'm going to try Bring a Trailer. Well, that turned out to be a wasted effort. It got the car exposed, so I guess it wasn't totally wasted. But anyway, I put it on Facebook Marketplace. Now, I'd had it on Facebook Marketplace, as I said, but I reposted it on Facebook Marketplace. Some guy is going through Walmart and sees, I don't know, I guess he's just, his wife is picking out, you know, sheets and pillowcases or something, and he's sitting there on his phone on Facebook Marketplace and sees that car and made an inquiry about it, and I told him where the car was, and he went to see my main mechanic down at Gateway Number 2. We call it G2. That makes sense, doesn't it? And he met with Johnny, and Johnny showed him the car. He said, I want the car for the listed price. And so he is he's coming today, as a matter of fact, to finalize the deal and pay me for the car. Facebook Marketplace is a powerful tool. Of course, you have to be on Facebook, you know, in order to be able to use it. But if you've got stuff to sell, that is the marketplace. And then you can sign up for these different groups. Okay, that's one of the things you have to do. You have to join these different groups of buyers. Just like there's a group in Mulsanne, Tennessee. There's multiple groups in Greenville, Tennessee. Multiple groups in Johnson City that you can sign up for. And they're all started by individuals who, you know, invite people to come into their group. And so if you want to expose what you have to sell to that group, then you have to be accepted into the group. So you send them a little message and say, hey, I'd like to be in your group. And then most of the time they'll let you in. But it's a great way to expose your vehicle to the public, because once you're in that group, it will go nationwide. So, and one of the inquiries I got on that 49 Buick was from St. Louis, Missouri. I had no idea that would go out that far. But that's the one where, you know, before I found out that the rear end could fall out of the thing. So this guy that's buying it is a local fella from, I think he's living in Limestone now. He's originally from Louisiana, and just, you know, active Facebook Marketplace buyer, seller, that kind of stuff. So that's a good place to do it. You know, the old days where you would call the Greenville Sun or the Johnson City Press and put in a classified ad, and then you have to deal with all the phone calls and all that stuff, or when you would, put the car in your front yard with a for sale sign in it. You know, that is just really a waste of time. Some people may say, I've sold a bunch of cars that way, putting them in the front yard. But the only people you're exposing it to are people who drive by your house. And, you know, if you're not on a busy road, that really doesn't work too well. I mean, the internet is where it's at. Now, you can actually sell vehicles, individual individuals can sell vehicles on Auto Trader, on cars.com and stuff. If you have a late model car, that's a good place to do it. But if you're selling an older car, Facebook Marketplace, I mean, even if it's not running, you know, if it's sitting up on blocks, I'm telling you, there's a buyer for it. I know a guy that, well, matter of fact, he works in the metal shop for Ricky Parton at Parton's Hot Rods. And this guy goes on the search every weekend for old, late 50s, early 60s model Chevrolets. He found a 62 Chevrolet. It's called the Bubble Top. I can't remember what year that was. Maybe 61. Has the flat fins on it. I think it's a 61 or maybe a 60. Who knows? But anyway, he found this car, and he was just going to do the metal work on the car. He paid $4,000 for the body. He's just going to do some metal work and then take pictures of it. Well, that's exactly what he did. Did the metal work. Now, you have to be able to do metal work in that particular example, but he did the metal work, posted it on Facebook Marketplace, and sold it, forget this, $14,000. Now, the metal work that he did, that's something you and I can't do. And so he had made some improvements to the car. If you had paid somebody to do that, it probably would have cost $4,000 or $5,000 to get that done. But he does it in his garage at home. He doesn't count his labor as worth anything because he is, you know, doing it after working hours and stuff. So he doesn't count that. In his mind, he made $10,000. Now, if we had to pay somebody, we wouldn't have made that much. But it still, it shows you, just because something is, sitting on blocks or, sitting in your backyard or something, been in your basement for 32 years, doesn't mean it doesn't have value. You want to shake a little money out of the tree, then that's one way to do it. What you have to be careful of is how people pay for stuff. Now, you know, sometimes, you know, you want to take cash if you can. You don't want to take a personal check. You don't ever want to give somebody a title to something, obviously, until you've got the money in the bank. There is such a thing as counterfeit currency. There is also such a thing as a counterfeit certified check, or a counter check, a bank check. I'd rather meet somebody at a bank to do the final transaction, or at a car dealership, you know, get some advice from somebody on how to handle titles. In the state of Tennessee, on a older vehicle, if it's an antique, you don't even have to have a title. Somebody can just sign over a bill of sale to you, and then you can go get a title printed. I've done that many times. So you just have to be careful who you're dealing with. And if you're a single woman or something like that, and, you know, you've got these shady characters that are, you know, coming to your house to look at your car and stuff, you just always need to make sure that you got somebody there with you. I mean, that probably sounds obvious to some of you, but I just think you have to, in this day and time, you need to protect yourself because who knows who's going to show up at your door and how they're going to pay you. And, you know, if you feel a little uncomfortable, whatever, then, just tell them to wait. Tell them you'll get back with them, you know, and then if they're legit. I know a lady that was selling a car to somebody coming up from Atlanta, and they were going to come up and haul her car off. And I said, well, just make sure there's somebody there with you, and, you know, are you taking cash? She said, cold, hard cash. And I said, okay, just make sure there's no counterfeits. Well, how do you do that? And I don't know. You know, that's because there's some of that goes on too. But selling your car is, it shouldn't be a terrible experience. I think you take advantage of the internet. If you are still using a flip phone and no computer in your house because you think they're evil, you get somebody else to post your vehicles. I sell vehicles for people all the time. Now, you know, if it's a four-door 1972 Chevy Nova, forget it, okay? Four doors is two doors too many. I'll tell you what's really valuable right now are these old, anything like an 73 through 87 Chevrolet pickup truck. They call them the square bodies. There's a lot of those out there, and those things are really valuable. You know, if they're rusted out, they're not as valuable. But if you have something like that or know of a car like that, reach out to me, and I'll be glad to help you with it. Again, my cell phone number, 423-552-2020, 2020, or you can send me, you know, I need pictures, I need VIN numbers, I need pretty good pictures too. I mean, so, pictures make a big difference. And if you're selling your car and you're taking pictures of it, don't take pictures in front of your garbage can or your junky carport or something. Go take it out to a pretty, you know, beside a pretty lake or real pretty barn or in the woods, something like that. You know, use a little salesmanship. Try to present it in its best light, and I think you'll get more money out of it. Anyway, we'll be back in just a minute. One other point that I want to make before we part is that if you are trying to sell a vehicle, just remember that if you sell it and then go out and buy something new, then you lose the sales tax credit. So one of the ways I tell people to work around that is get a commitment to sell the car, make sure it's legit and that you have it all lined up. And then if you're wanting to buy a new car, go to the dealership and say, listen, I want to buy this new whatever, say it's a Silverado. I want to buy this new Silverado, but I want to trade in this 1964 Galaxy 500. And they say, well, we don't want that. We say, well, you don't have to take it because I already have it sold, but I want to use it as trade-in on my new one. And then it'll save me on the sales tax. Well, do you have it sold? Yes, I have it sold for this dollar amount. So trade it. You turn around and sell it to this person. Now, don't charge him any extra fees or anything, and you'll have a deal. And then he'll pay sales tax on the car that I'm trying to sell to him, and I'll pay sales tax on the difference of the car that you're selling to me. And now, if that salesperson or sales manager looks at you oddly, and doesn't understand what you're trying to do, then maybe you need to go somewhere else. But I do that kind of stuff all the time. I say, folks, you know, if you want to go ahead and sell your car to that person, bring it in. I'll give you the same credit for the sale as he's paying you for the car. You will? Yes, I will, because that's what we do. We try to accommodate people at my dealership. So anyway, that's an option for you. If you got that old car in the basement and you don't want it anymore, turn it into dollars. Why not? Well, thanks for listening to this edition of My Car Guru, and I will see you tomorrow morning at 9:05.